Thank you.
Number two is a resolution expressing opposition to any and all attempts to restrict an eligible individual's constitutionality regarding guaranteed right to vote in Wisconsin, and specifically expresses opposition to Senate Substitute Amendment 1 to Senate Bill 6.
Thank you. Supervisor Harris, would you like to speak to this, please?
Yes, I will. And thank you for allowing me to speak to this resolution. I first want to thank the colleagues of ours that did support and signed on to co-sponsor the resolution, and that is John Weishun, Jerry Broderick, and Marina Dimitrievich, as well as our chairman, Lee Holloway, who all are in support of opposing the Senate Substitute Amendments 1 to the Senate Bill 6 in regard to voter ID. And the reason I am submitting this is, as you have followed this, some of you may and some of you may not, but hopefully we all have been following the voter ID bill, and it's going to significantly disenfranchise our communities, particularly the elderly, the disabled, college students, as well as minorities as a whole. And I stand here, sit here today to just inform you that we need to, as a county board, speak loud and clear to the state in regard to how this is going to affect Milwaukee County and the state as a whole. So I just wanted to, I had a few more things I wanted to say just to sort of express to you what this will do further is eliminating corroboration as individuals go to the polls. It takes away from the fact that someone can vouch for a resident that lives in their neighborhood and their community that they actually do live in that house or community, and so that would take that opportunity away from them to vote at the polls. It eliminates the use of college students' ID, the state institution identification, as well as elderly who are age 65 and older who do not have the means of transportation. A lot of them do not even have the access and use of their birth certificate, and they were either they actually moved to with Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and so therefore they would have to go back to their home state in order to even acquire a birth certificate. And not to mention that some of these individuals were born and delivered by a midwife, so they wouldn't even have any record of their birth. And finally, I wanted to bring up low-income and low-wage workers who cannot afford to take off their jobs just to go to the DMV and get an identification. Now, I understand that there is an argument that if you need an ID for everything. However, I beg to differ that you may need an ID for everything, but in Wisconsin, we never needed an identification to vote. Okay, so therefore, this will further disenfranchise. And I'll just read the stats real quick as far as the staggering amounts of voting age Wisconsinites who do not have a valid driver's license. And that is 17% of Wisconsinites, 23% of all elderly Wisconsinites over the age of 65, 17% of white men and women, 55% of all African-American males, 49% of African-American women, 46% of Hispanic men, 59% of Hispanic women, 78% of African-American males age 18 to 24, 66% of African-American women age 18 to 24. I wanted to read that because it is staggering and it is quite frustrating to realize that there are people who can't. And not all of it is due to the fault of those individuals. Again, just pointing out to the low-income, low-wage individuals who can't take time off work, our elderly who don't have transportation, so on and so forth. And there was another further point I needed to make, so please bear with me. And so just in closing, I think that if we want to, if we really say that we're not eliminating and oppressing or suppressing the vote, then we need to consider that eliminating early voter registration or election day registration, eliminating that is not the way to go. So I just want us to send a message to the state, and I do have individuals here that will testify in support of this resolution, and I can also entertain any questions very quickly if anyone has any.
Okay. Thank you, Supervisor. We'd rather have committee first. We have a number of speakers. Should we do committee first or speakers first? That would be your preference. Does anybody care?
Let's do committee first. We can get.
Okay. Supervisor Dmitrievich, I think you were first, and Supervisor Broder. You're so welcome. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm fine with you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Why I was so anxious to speak is that I wanted to make sure I got the motion for approval on the table. Mm-hmm. And that being said, Supervisor Harris is doing a wonderful job on this, leading the effort. Just a few other issues that that Supervisor Harris didn't talk about, because she's talked about so much here, is, and hopefully our IGR staff can speak to this or not, but it's a matter of fact that the bill's cost is still unknown to local governments. So at a time when, just on the next issue, we'll be talking about many other things going on. I mean, estimates were at about $4 million statewide. Obviously, we know that Milwaukee County, being the largest county in the state, will always be affected with more zeros mm-hmm. after whatever that is. And I'm seriously concerned about that. In fact, I could think of something to do with $4 million. You know, maybe don't cut transit as much or what have you. But anyways, that's something that I'm seriously concerned about. And then, you know, lastly, too, I think it needs to be noted that, and before that even comes up, I wanted to preempt it because I want to make sure we get it on the record, that, you know, there has been very few cases of voter fraud. And, in fact, we found the Attorney General had only found 20 cases of potential fraud, and that's with millions of votes being cast throughout that two-year period. So I wanted to bring that up. And then, you know, just lastly, I do move approval and also know that the City of Milwaukee, our largest municipality in Milwaukee County, also adopted a very similar resolution recently. So with that, again, the motion is for approval. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. Thank you. Supervisor Broder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, would like to thank the author for her attention to this matter in the midst of all the chaos politically that's going on about us. This should take the kind of precedence that I think you've given it. You know, it's clear that nationwide, at least in seven states that I'm aware of, and probably more, there are orchestrated efforts at voter suppression, brought primarily by Republican governors in those states. It appears to be an orchestrated effort, and I don't think that should be understated. And while money is a concern, and I think an appropriate one as raised by my colleague Supervisor Dmitrievich, disenfranchising all the people that Supervisor Harris, the groups that you referred to, in the name of democracy is a mockery of representative government and is shameful. And the people who are sponsoring this kind of exclusionary method of suppressing votes ought to be ashamed. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Supervisor.
I just have one other point, Chairman.
Sure, go ahead, Supervisor.
And this is a point I wanted to make as I was sitting here reading from my short list of things. But as far as people being able to get acquire an identification, mm-hmm. we have to also consider that in Wisconsin, and I know that this bill was also sort of modeled after Indiana, that in Wisconsin there are 88 DMVs as opposed to Indiana, which has 140. About 30% of Wisconsin's 88 DMVs are open either one day a month or even less frequently. Wisconsin has only one DMV with weekend hours in Dane County, while Indiana has 124 offices with weekend hours. The Wisconsin counties have no DMV offices, while Indiana County has a DMV. So that's just another point to make, to, you know, so you can see that we're putting people in a really tough situation to be able to take off work and whatever they need to do in order to get this identification. So it's making it really challenging for individuals.
Thank you. I have a list of speakers here who want to speak on number two, and I'd ask you to summarize if you have the same kind of points, just to maybe summarize those if you have anything extra to add. Obviously, that would be helpful. Okay. So on this issue of the voter ID county resolution, I'll kind of try to take an order. I got Mr. David Sartori, who's in the Board of Election Commissioners. You have the floor, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I'm David Sartori, Milwaukee County Election Commission. I am here today at the special request of Supervisor Harris. I want to make it very clear. I am in favor of a photo identification proposal. However, Senate Bill 6 is not that. Senate Bill 6 is an absolute abortion of our current election laws in the state of Wisconsin. This is a copy of Senate Bill 6.
Everybody has a copy of that, correct? Yes. Thank you.
With the introduction by the Legislative Reference Bureau, it is 74 pages. After it was introduced, the Wisconsin Municipal Clerks Association submitted a series of recommendations to the Legislative Reference Bureau. As a result, this is Supplemental Bill 1 to Senate Bill 6. Mm-hmm. It consists of 69 pages. This is a copy of Supplemental Change 1 to the change in the First Amendment. And there are four other amendments to this that really don't address a lot of issues. Now, in the original proposal, with very, very limited exceptions, one could register and vote in Wisconsin if one had a valid Wisconsin driver's license, a photo ID card from the Uniform Armed Forces, and no one forgot to tell the people that we have a large number of non-American citizens in our military who do have Armed Forces ID cards. A Wisconsin identification card issued by the Division of Motor Vehicles. In the original bill, that with a few exceptions was all that could be considered identification, and it was addressed as statutory voter identification. Senate Bill 1 has abolished that, and it's now called personal identification requirements. A U.S. passport was originally not considered adequate identification. I am a disabled combat American veteran. Okay? This is my VA card from the Veterans Administration. I can take this card to any VA hospital in the United States, Guam, the Philippines, the Mariana Islands, Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands, and on some limited cases, American military facilities, and receive treatment. Okay? Mm-hmm. Currently, this is unacceptable as identification, and I resent that. You know, when I came home from a shooting war, people spat on me. And this is like being spit on all over again. I have reviewed the fiscal impact statements. There's a total of three. The Wisconsin Department of Justice indicates that there will be no fiscal impact on it. They're going to have hundreds and hundreds of new voter fraud allegations and charges, I feel, under this proposal. The Wisconsin Department of Motor Vehicle, in their fiscal impact, they state that they will encounter a $2.7 million loss in revenue because under a U.S. Supreme Court decision, you cannot charge anyone for identification cards if they're used in voting, okay? Actually, it's the estimate is $2,736,832. Additionally, they consider that they will have to add, and I don't know where they came up with this number, 1.4 additional employees to implement this law at a cost of $61,680. Yet, to process one single identification card takes 18.6 minutes by their own time study. And the department or the Governmental Accountability Office, you know, there are people who read this stuff. And I do have a life.
Is it a cure for insomnia?
Yeah. And thanks for your service.
And I get a real kick out of this. Governmental Accountability Office estimates that each year there will be $2,082,259 of new additional spending. And then there's a little snippet here about government, the cost of local government. GAB staff anticipates an indeterminate and ongoing cost to local government units to maintain this process. There are 2,800 polling places in the state of Wisconsin. There are, in Milwaukee County, 420 voting sites. I figure, adding the new cost of the photocopy machines, the identification has to be photocopied. There has to be an original handwritten sample. I estimate that at least $1,000 of additional cost will be added per voting site. And I think that's very, very conservative. And if you multiply $2,800 by $1,000, it is a significant impact on local government. Perhaps this is what is being meant as giving local government new tools to deal with mounting costs at the local level. Also, I take great pride in noting who the sponsor is of this bill, the sponsor in the Wisconsin Assembly. It's a person who has promised us more efficient government, lower cost, a gentleman by the name of Jeff Stone, who I'm sure we all know. And you read this stuff, and if you're involved in the nuts and bolts of the operation, this is an absolute nightmare. Oh, also I wanted to show that my Milwaukee County identification card is unacceptable. But yet, when I do my polling place inspections in Milwaukee County, I wear this around my neck, the first thing I do is I introduce myself to the chief election inspector. I sign the GAB 109, which is the visitation form, and then I start asking questions and observing. And I'm the only election commissioner in not only Milwaukee County, but even the city that goes out and does election polling place inspections. And I'm serious about it. This is one of the most sacred rights we have as American citizens, the right to vote. We may not vote smart. We certainly don't always vote the right way. But nevertheless, it still is a right. And it's a right that I personally have shed my blood for.
Thank you, sir.
Thank
okay.
you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. We're specifically talking about Milwaukee County, of course, and we have the district attorney here. I don't know if Mr. Chisholm wants to, or is prepared. prepared to specifically speak on the law. I mean, since we're right on that, then we will get the other speakers, but maybe since we're on that, maybe you could speak to that, and maybe you have your own comments, Mr. District Attorney. But for myself, and I would presume for the committee too, we're interested in the ramifications. Have you had a chance to look at the Senate bill too?
I have.
Maybe you could comment on that.
Chairman Schmidt,
we've heard comments on what it entails, and from our previous speaker, election commissioner, and I guess that'd be enough intro for you to get into it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairman Schmidt and supervisors. I was invited by Supervisor Harris last week to come, and I look at it as being completely consistent with our obligation to provide information. We did the same thing on January 26, 2011, in front of the Senate Commission on Elections, and I sent my most experienced person, Bruce Landgraf, an assistant DA, who has had the single responsibility obligation in my office as part of my public integrity unit to focus on making sure that we had elections that were clean and maintain the perception of cleanness. And I would just simply note, in light of the commissioner's testimony, we just went through a hotly contested statewide election, and there were no allegations whatsoever from either side, but certainly not the winning side, of widespread voter fraud or misconduct during these elections. And there's a reason for that. There's a reason for that, and that is because there's been a concerted effort made at all levels of state and local government to address the fundamental issues that have raised concerns in the past. And we simply don't stand back from it enough and thank these election commissioners and their staffs and the people that work the polling places that really provide these phenomenal services. You just had an interesting development in the last election where everyone was able to go online and report what the experience was like in their polling place in Milwaukee County. So the Journal Sentinel had a live blog in place that got thousands and thousands of hits. And this was in the same time as we had dedicated personnel responding to any complaints related to the election. And I think the universal experience that most people had was that the elections were run well, that they were efficient, and that people were confident that when they went in there, their vote got counted, and the process was fair and open to everyone. My concerns with respect to this are simply to provide information. We've been focused on this issue for over 4 years now. We've made substantive changes to how we process the elections, how we respond ahead of time to problems, to prevent these problems from occurring. And I think that to a certain extent, what you have with Senate Bill 6 and the amendments are, again, a solution in search of a problem to a certain extent. I've reiterated any time that I believe strongly that we have to do everything we can to maintain the integrity of the election process, but we also have to put everybody as much energy into making those elections accessible. What I see coming through here plays into that classic fear that comes from the two perspectives. The first perspective is that there is, in fact, widespread voter fraud. Again, in my experience, we have never demonstrated any pattern of widespread voter fraud. What is the countervailing concern has always been that there are concerted efforts to suppress voter activity. Again, I would say that I have never seen any widespread activities that have led to suppression. However, there's no question that the consequences of this bill will make it more difficult for people to vote. And so if it plays into any of those two concerns, the concern is that you are going to have people that are eligible to vote, that should be voting, and because the process becomes more difficult, are not going to vote. And that would be a great disservice to all of us who put our primary efforts into making sure that the process is clean and fair. So with that in mind, what I'd really like to do is just address any concerns that you have that I can relate to what our practical experiences are. So from the 2008 election, I can indicate, for example, that, what are the actual numbers that we're talking about with respect to referrals for election fraud in the city of Milwaukee. So you had, for example, out of the 2008 election, you had 84 double voter referrals. You had 39 felon voter referrals. You had two deceased voter referrals for a total of 125. Of that number, 18 were prosecuted. In other words, that means that they were investigated, and that what we determined is, as we usually determine, is that it's actually the rare exception that it's actually criminal misconduct. It's generally an explainable event. Either a mistake is made in the process or somebody makes an honest mistake, and there is no criminal intent behind it. I put that number out there. In the last election, 2010, we had approximately 30 referrals that are subject to ongoing investigation right now. Out of the spring primary elections, we've had three referrals. And again, you have to put this in the context of how many people are actually voting. And again, the numbers are really significant. You're looking at, let's see here. Give you the exact number of individuals that voted in the 2008 election for the city of Milwaukee. You had 275,000 voters. In the 2010 election, you had 187,000 voters. So if you just you can do the math on that. We're talking less than a tenth of 1% of even allegations of misconduct, and even a smaller percentage that are found to actually result in misconduct of some kind. So how would I sum them up? Look, our laws are set up to make voting accessible to all eligible voters. There is a presumption of good faith that is accorded to all of our citizens in this process. It can be abused, and some very few number of individuals choose to abuse that process. But I have, again, and I'll repeat, never found, and we have looked very closely and responded very quickly to any allegations that that the process itself was being subverted, and we simply haven't found that to be the case. So with that in mind, my concerns are simply that we are restricting the ways in which people can access the polls and be found. Now, there's some escape clauses in place that haven't been addressed. For example, a person that does not have the proper identification is going to be allowed to provisionally vote anyways, and then by 4 o'clock the following day, they have to provide a verified form of identification. But again, I can imagine all sorts of problems with that process right there. And quite frankly, the process in place right now works pretty well when you have somebody that can verify that person is a citizen and resides at a particular address and can vouch for that person. It's an effective process, quite frankly, and doing away with that is going to have unintended administrative consequences and costs associated with it. So I'm here to answer questions or allay concerns people may have about the history of our election concerns and what steps we've taken to address those.
Questions?
Yes.
Supervisor?
Very quickly, Mr. Chairman.
Surely.
In your data, I was wondering a more specific question about absentee ballots, because this seems that seems like a very extreme, the very essence of asking for an absentee ballot most of the time in my almost 8 years here being elected. It's not always the case, but the majority are for people who are either disabled or seniors who cannot get to the polls, and it's not always the case. So, again, sometimes that's also our population that has more of a challenge in getting an ID or a new driver's license, or perhaps in the essence of that application aren't driving and whatnot. And so my question is, now we're asking for them to make a copy of their license that they may or may not have and mail it and this and that. Has there been rampant fraud with absentee ballots?
Yes, there has been, particularly in the 2008 election, there was no question that there was a significant increase in the absentee balloting process 30 days outside the election. That was a concerted effort to do so. It's actually the opposite in my experience. The absentee process actually allows election officials and law enforcement officials to identify problems and respond to them proactively. You have enough time, in essence, to identify a problem and then do something about it before that problem is manifest in a improper vote or changing the election in some way. Mm-hmm. The interesting aspect of your question is that most of the absentee ballots actually people do identify themselves, often self-identify themselves using driver's license numbers and things like that. So it's a provision that's in place already, and again restricting the ability of people to use that process, I think, will have some unintended negative consequences.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? I have a couple.
Please.
Okay. The rationale for voter ID, take away any chance of fraud, having a voter ID and making that mandatory as this bill does that negate, take away the possibility of double voting or any other fraud that you can see?
No, it does not. And it makes it more difficult, there's no question. And I think when the commissioner was speaking to the issue of why he supports a form of voter ID is because even though, again, we rarely see that as a event. In fact, in the last, in the 2010 election, I think we had 10 allegations of double voting. That means somebody walked in and found out that somebody had already voted under their name. Only two of those were not innocent explanations. And so there's no question that a form of ID, particularly on the polling, a form of photo ID on the day of election would effectively eliminate many of those problems. But again, the concern is if you're restricting the type of ID that's provided, it doesn't address the fundamental problem itself. And so many of the double voting problems are being addressed, I think, by very close attention to the voter registration system and by election commissions making sure that their books are clean before the election. I think that's the primary lesson we've learned is to invest. If I were to ask anything out of this current legislature as they're looking at the issue of voter ID, is what would probably be the most beneficial to elections and their integrity would be to properly resource the election commissioners and the election commissions throughout the state and the polling sites themselves to make sure that everybody was properly trained, that they had the resources to invest in making sure that the information they have in their polling books is accurate and up to date.
Just your Chisholm, my second question would be, and I have a very brief third one. In looking at the 2011 Senate Bill 6, the Amendment 1 as amended, who is disenfranchised? Who cannot vote that previously was able to vote under this amendment? Can you speak to that?
Nobody per se is. In other words, there's a process available for them to still access the polls. There's no question that the population that would be most impacted would be students, particularly out-of-state students. And I just speak to the issue. It's my understanding that those are individuals that would have to get a special form of identification. It would cost $26, and for a student to slap down $26 to vote, is you know, and again, my experience that would really cause some severe moral dilemmas. Is it two 12 packs or do I go vote? Right? I mean, that's that was a problem with the college IDs. But in effect,
that's something I can identify
with. That's, yeah.
And thanks for getting specific too.
Yeah, right.
Appreciate
the and again, it, as has been mentioned, I have concerns about the disabled. I have concern about the elderly, but the process will still be in place. They can still do it. I just think it's going to become more difficult.
Okay. The last one we've had talk, we had the election commissioner tell us about, you know, his guesstimate about money. So have you looked at that? Do you have any kind of feeling on the costs that might be involved in making sure this is enforced?
No, I can simply speak to the passage of almost all legislation. It always underestimates the costs of implementation, and I suspect it's going to be the same here, is that this will result in additional burdens for election commissions, for the polling sites themselves, and for law enforcement when it comes to following up on these investigations. And that again, is one of the reasons that we wanted to be present and provide our information. And my specific request of the Senate and the current Wisconsin legislature is do a meaningful estimate, to really talk to your election commissioners, talk to your law enforcement agencies, and get a meaningful estimate of the cost of this legislation in terms of personnel and other costs associated with it. But I think it's going to be much more expensive than what they are predicting.
Thank you very much for coming. I'm sure Supervisor Harris appreciates it. We appreciate it, too.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Okay, moving on, and our speakers, and taking consideration what you've heard in the County Executive's Office, Mr. Broussard. Can you identify yourself again for those listening,
sure.
Please?
I'm E. Marie Broussard, Deputy Chief of Staff for the County Executive's Office, County Executive Pratt. Good afternoon, Chairman and Supervisors. The County Executive asked me to speak on his behalf today because he'd like to express his support for the resolution presented by Supervisor Harris and the group. The County Executive believes that access to the ballot box is an essential element to democracy and that barriers to voting disproportionately harm those most in need of representation. So therefore, the County Executive joins Chairman Holloway, Supervisors Harris, Wyshon, Dmitrievich, and Broderick in vigorous support of this resolution in opposition of Senate Bill 6.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
If anybody has questions, if people come up, just get my attention. Okay, thank you. Barbara Beckert.
Thank you, Chairman Schmidt and Supervisors. My name is Barbara Beckert. I'm Director of the Milwaukee Office of Disability Rights, Wisconsin. I want to thank Supervisor Harris for her resolution and for the opportunity to share with you some concerns today about the impact of this bill on people with disabilities. Wisconsin should be proud of the record we have of having one of the highest voter participation rates in our country. But even with that record, people with disabilities still lag behind. As noted in the testimony that I've shared with you, of the approximately 600,000 people with disabilities of voting age in our state, they do cast ballots at a rate of 10 to 15% below the general voting population already. And that's because of some of the barriers faced in terms of access to transportation, accessibility, et cetera. Make no mistake, if this bill moves forward, there will be significant additional barriers for people with disabilities to exercise their constitutional right to cast a ballot, and will feel the burden disproportionately in Milwaukee County. 20% of the people with disabilities in our state live in Milwaukee County. We also have a disproportionate share of people who are homeless, many of them people with mental illness. Nonetheless, all of those individuals do have a constitutional right to vote. I've heard many people say, oh, everyone has a photo ID. You need a photo ID to get a videotape at Blockbuster. Well, believe it or not, a lot of people do not currently have a photo ID, and voting is a constitutional right. Getting a video at Blockbuster or, you know, buying products, you know, I've heard given as an analogy is not a constitutional right. So I think we should take this very seriously. The difficulties that people with disabilities face often relate to access to transportation. Because of their disability, it may be hard for them to leave their home. For that reason, they may not be able to go to the DMV. And we've already heard from Supervisor Harris how problematic access to the DMV already is. It's even more so if you have a disability. So folks are going to have difficulty getting these photo IDs, and many people may not have the necessary documents that are needed to obtain a photo ID, a birth certificate, for example. I'm particularly concerned that homeless individuals, again, a high percentage of them are people with mental illness or another disability, are effectively going to be disenfranchised because the likelihood that they are going to be able to have the money to get the documents that are necessary to obtain this photo ID is very minimal. So, again, I thank you all for your support. I'm deeply concerned about the impact that this will have on people with disabilities, and I ask you to keep the right to vote for people with disabilities and all citizens of Milwaukee County high on your agenda as you look at legislative priorities. And please know that we continue to work very hard on this issue, but we found very little willingness in the current environment to accept amendments which would address some of the barriers that we're deeply concerned about.
Okay, thank you. Our next speaker, I have Sierra Brown.
Hello. My name is Sierra Brown, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Campaign Against Violence League of Young Voters Education Fund. My organization works to get young people involved in our community as well as involved in the political process. And with the voter ID bill, it will make it more difficult for us to achieve that goal. As stated before, this ID bill was created to prevent voter fraud, but with the small chance of voter fraud actually happening, there's no sense in having this bill passed. Also, it's going to work to disenfranchise communities, as stated before, such as students, the elderly, disabled, young people, and minorities. It's considered a distraction from the true issue in our community, and that's joblessness. In fact, 50% of African-American males, they don't have a job right now, and that's not even including the people who have stopped searching for jobs. Many people feel that a bill that isn't helping to create jobs, but instead working to resolve an issue that is pretty much irrelevant, it shouldn't have a place in our community. Along with the costs, estimated $4.4 million, along with an extra $2.7 million for each year after it's created, that money could be used to provide jobs. So I just think that this bill is a distraction from the main, well, a really big issue in our community, and the money should be used for something better.
Okay, Supervisor Borkowski, another question? Thank
yes.
you. For the young lady?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yeah. First of all, thank you for coming, and I'm impressed with your poise.
Thank you.
Let me ask you a question. You started out by saying that that this bill is going to hurt your organization, and what exactly does that mean? How exactly would this bill affect your organization?
Well, our organization works to get young people like myself and other people in our community involved in voting. And what we do, we go around and we register young people to vote. But if this bill is passed, then we don't only have to advocate for people to go vote, but we have to advocate them to find a way to get an ID so that they can go out and vote. So it's basically adding an extra load on us to get people out and involved in the political process.
An extra challenge, but it wouldn't, in essence, decimate your organization.
No, it wouldn't, but it would make it more difficult. And it's a right. It's a constitutional right, like it was stated before, for us to vote. And not having an ID and not being able to vote, that's not what Wisconsin should stand for.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor. Mm-hmm. All right. Next speaker, Mary Felder. Mary here? That's Mary. Okay.
Hi.
You're on cue.
Hi, my name is Mary Felder, and I'm representing Wisconsin Citizen Action. I'm a resident of Milwaukee, and just like to pass these out, can it? I'm totally opposed to particularly picture ID to vote. Some of us in this room may remember that we couldn't vote before we were 21. We could now vote at 18. And that was to encourage more voters. We're getting older. I have two photo IDs. Every 8 years, we take pictures. 8 years ago, now. 8 years from now, I'll be quite old. I won't be dyeing my hair anymore. So I won't even look like this.
have a great concern about that. When I go to the polls, they may reject me. But I passed around a copy. Some of you may remember what happened in South Africa, apartheid. And my point is that they could only, if they were without photo ID, they could be arrested. In New York, if you do not carry voter ID, you're a vagrant. Are we aware of that? So I have a big concern. We want to encourage, particularly young people, to vote. And if we're making it more difficult for them to vote by carrying ID, particularly the picture ID, that is going to be a problem. We live in a democracy that we want people to vote. There's very little fraud. It's not to the advantage of a young person or any of us to commit fraud. The fraud was committed in Chicago, dead people, Philadelphia, dead people, New York. More dead people voted probably than anybody. So we don't encourage that. In some countries, they can vote as early as 16. And that may come to, you know, be that. But my concern is that if we have to carry voter ID, it's not just going to end at the ballot box. We're going to have to carry it every day. We're going to have to carry it wherever we go. That is a great concern. Do we want to become another South Africa where we have to have a passbook? I hope not. I'd like to live to see that we can encourage people to vote and they're voting for the right reasons. Thank you.
Thank you.
You can keep those little passbooks.
All righty. I have three other speakers. I don't know if they want to come up together or they I think they came up together, so you come up together, or if you want to do individually, that's fine. But so I have Marcus Haynes, I have David Bowen, and I have Charmaine Harris. Oh, I wonder if that's a Harris. Would that be a relative? No. You're welcome either way, that's for sure. Would you like to come up, or would you want to speak? Or I know you're registering in four. Would you like to speak? I take that as a yes.
I'm David Bowen.
Okay.
That's Marquise.
Hello.
Okay.
I guess we can go together, right?
Sure.
All right.
Wonderful.
Cool.
And that's Sherman. We figure that one out. All righty. We got the mic's on, right?
I believe so.
Okay, very good. Yeah.
First off, I'll just start off by saying, again, I'm David Bowen. I'm the program director for a youth organization in Milwaukee that works with high school age youth called Urban Underground. And we mainly train young people to be leaders in their community and to really address issues that affect other young people in their high school. Just a little background. This resolution against the voter ID bill, we support. We definitely think that it would be harder for young people to get to the polls and to express their opinion through voting and being included in that voting process than requiring them to have IDs. So I let Marquise just give his perspective as being a young person.
And you're all in the Urban Underground, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
After reading through it, I noticed that it said that they wouldn't accept the college or university ID. I was, as you know, I thought about it per se and realized why should a college ID not be acceptable? That's something I never came to a conclusion about. Why should a college or university ID be acceptable if it shows that you have been a resident of the city of Milwaukee or the state of Wisconsin?
Myself, as a person just graduating college, and I remember my first time being able to go into the polls and vote in the 2008 election, and I remember the feeling I had and being able to go into the poll and to put that ballot in, and I remember being so excited. And I know that now having to have an ID will prohibit me. Well, I have an ID, but a lot of young people who don't mm-hmm. have an identification card to be able to go into the polls and vote. And it becomes very conflicting because it's our constitutional right to be able to go into polls and vote. And seeing the amount of minority people who don't have identification cards. Say 55% of African-American men and 49% of women and 46% of Hispanic men. So kind of, it's really alarming to see that so many people don't have identification cards now, and the amount of people who may have to go to purchase that $26 card, and which will become very difficult for a lot of people. So the whole bill is very alarming.
I would just like to reiterate that voter fraud is not a problem to the degree that some people would like to make it out to be. And with the, like some of the other young people that came from the Campaign Against Violence was stating, with unemployment being as large and impactful as it is right now, a lot of young people don't have the resources to go spend money on an ID, out of all things that they would really need to spend money on. So it would definitely be impactful there. Any questions?
Any other comments, committee? Okay, thank you very much
thank
for
you.
Coming. We have a motion on the floor from Supervisor Dmitrievich to in support of the Harris, Holloway, Dmitrievich, Broderick, and Weishan. They're all signed on to that amendment. Right in the resolution. Any other comments now? You may take the roll, please.
On approval, Supervisors Borkowski.
No.
Weishan.
Aye.
Cesars.
No.
Broderick.
Aye.
Dmitrievich.
Aye.
And Mr. Chairman.
Aye.
Motion approved, 4-2.
Thank you.